comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello there and welcome. Today is Wednesday, October the 4th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's running mates face off.
You whipped out that Mexican thing again. Look,
can you defend it?
Voters in 9 U.S. states are not just voting for president, they are voting on marijuana. Hurricane Matthew pounding Haiti and could have a brush with the United States. Also, an honor and a new album for American musician Usher. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the vice presidential candidates faced off for 90 minutes Tuesday night in their one and only debate of the campaign. Virginia Senator Tim Kaine aggressively challenged Donald Trump's qualifications for president, casting him as a me-first mogul who won't level with Americans about his business record. Indiana Governor Mike Pence lashed back with criticism of Hillary Clinton, but didn't dispute that running mate Trump hadn't paid federal taxes for years. Here's a bit of one of their barely understandable exchanges.
She had a Clinton Foundation accepting contributions from foreign governments.
You are Donald Trump's apprentice. Let me talk about this.
Senator,
issue
I think I'm still on my time.
Well, I think isn't this a discussion?
This is our open discussion.
Senator, let's talk about this.
Well,
let me interrupt you
and finish my sentence if I can.
Well, joining me now live in studio, VOA national correspondent Jim Malone here with details and analysis. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Lori.
Well, these two guys, they've really not gotten a whole lot of attention during this campaign. We've got such strong personalities for running for president with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Some people don't even know who they are, really. What are your initial thoughts, and was there a clear winner?
Even a lot of Americans don't know really who they
are.
And we should say that a guy like Mike Pence, who was in the House of Representatives before he was governor, a very strong social conservative. He comes out of that mold. Tim Kaine was a mayor. He was governor of Virginia. He's now a senator. He's used to winning elections statewide in Virginia, but you need to be able to appeal across party lines there to do that. So that's a little bit of window into their backgrounds. I think this debate was more contentious, more argumentative, if you will, than we would have expected. This election is clearly about Trump and Clinton. And in this vice presidential debate, that's mostly what we heard about. And mostly it was a very aggressive Tim Kaine, the Democrat, trying to put Mike Pence on the defensive, trying to get him to defend specific comments that many people have found insulting over the months that Donald Trump said. Pence often would try to ignore that and move on to other issues, to try to attack Hillary Clinton on her email problems or her trustworthiness. So I think the bottom line here is, depending on which camp you're in, you're going to find something to like from both men's performances this evening.
Do you think there was a clear winner, or was it a draw?
Well, I think a lot of the Republicans are going to argue that Pence remained cool under pressure, under relentless attacks from Kaine, under being repeatedly pressed to defend Trump statements. So in that sense, they're going to look at it as a victory, a much cooler, calmer candidate than what we saw in Donald Trump in the first debate. But on the Democratic side, I don't think there's anything there that's going to dent their momentum, or it might even actually, I think, ramp up the enthusiasm on the Democratic side, because Kaine was aggressive in a way I think that will resonate with Democratic partisans who are really leery of Donald Trump. Whether that will play that well with the remaining small pool of undecided voters, I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, this is a momentary lapse in time. We are very quickly going back to the main contenders, Trump and Clinton, and their next debate next Sunday.
So basically what you're saying is you don't really think this will have much impact on the election overall or the polls?
Traditionally, the vice presidential debates don't have a lot of impact. I don't think it's going to do much on the polls. It might help the Republicans a bit, try to regain their composure after a very, very rough week by Trump. But at the end of the day, the only one that can fix that is Donald Trump, and we're days away from knowing that.
All right. We appreciate it as always. Thanks for your perspective, VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Here are some of the stories that we are following at voanews.com. A U.S. service member killed in Afghanistan. Hillary Clinton regains a polling edge over Donald Trump. Colombia and the rebels return to peace talks in Cuba. And the UN says a humanitarian crisis in Yemen rivals Syria. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Hurricane Matthew, a powerful Category 4 storm, has slammed into Haiti with winds of 230 kilometers per hour and fierce rain. It's knocked out power and phone lines and washed away the only bridge connecting the peninsula to the rest of the country. Communications between the capital and three provinces are non-existent right now, making it impossible for authorities and emergency workers to know the number of casualties and damage details. National Hurricane Center meteorologist Dennis Feltgen says Matthew is an extremely dangerous storm and predicts it'll remain a powerful storm at least through Thursday, with hurricane warnings posted for eastern Cuba and much of the Bahamas.
It's expected to turn to the north-northwest and then northwest during the next 24 to 36 hours, which would place the hurricane right through the Bahamian chain from southeast Bahamas through central and then eventually northwest Bahamas. A hurricane watch has been issued now for a portion of the Florida coastline. There are no watches or warnings out anywhere or else along the southeastern United States. The only watches that are up right now are along the Florida coastline. That said, looking down the road later on in the week, additional watches may be required northward. That could include portions of Georgia and both South and North Carolina. There's still a good deal of uncertainty in the track on that, but right now the folks there in the Carolinas and Georgia have a couple of days to watch this very closely.
Well, with parts of the east coast of the U.S. on high alert, the American Red Cross is preparing to assist. Joining me from Miami, Florida, Red Cross South Florida Communications Director Roberto Baltadano, sorry about that, sir. What are you doing to prepare?
As an organization, we're constantly preparing, and so throughout the year, we have been in close coordination with both local authorities and local partners as well as our volunteers, making sure that not only do we have a trained workforce and ready to respond, but also the relationships that an organization like ours needs in order to stand up an operation at a moment's notice. Currently, we are putting our volunteers on standby, making sure they are taking care of the home front, that their families are safe so they can respond when the time comes, and communicating with the community, making sure they are taking three basic steps to be ready to sustain themselves for the first few hours before and during the response, which is to be able to get a kit, have the essentials they need at home, to have a plan, make sure that they know where to go if they need to evacuate, make sure that they have a communications plan that includes a contact outside the local area, and most importantly, that they understand their risk and they stay informed by following the local news reports as well as weather service reports.
What are you hearing about what South Florida might get as far as this hurricane is concerned?
Well, the models change, and it is too early to say with certainty what the impact will be. We do know, based on the forecast that we are getting, that we are going to be on the left side of the wall. We understand the eye is going to be maybe 100 miles out towards the Bahamas area, and we're still going to be seeing then tropical storm effects on our end, pretty much throughout the coast, from the lower mid-keys across the southeast coast in the United States. And so pretty much every Red Cross chapter along the coast is taking precautionary measures to make sure that we are ready to respond should the need arise.
What about shelters, temporary shelters?
We got them on standby, and that's part of the preparations we do year-round, every year with the local authorities. Rather, we normally have agreements with the school system, with local churches and community locations, where we can open up shelters at a moment's notice. In this case, we already have shelters on standby, both locations and people, to be able to respond. One message important that we want to send out to the public is, should you be ordered to evacuate, please heed those orders and be ready to come either to a friend's house, which is what we recommend, or to come to one of our shelters, which may not be the most comfortable place. We got to be sure that they understand and they know the expectations of what a shelter experience is. It is a safe environment where they're going to have food, a safe place to stay, but they may not have the accommodations one normally has at home. Hence the kit, the importance of having a kit that includes a pillow and a blanket, perhaps.
Are you putting people, other volunteers in other states, on standby in case you may need extra help?
Yes. Part of the Red Cross network is to have particularly those volunteers with the specialty track, those that have trained within the specialty. For instance, in my case, I was a volunteer that specialized in feeding, and so I'm able to feed masses. And so whenever those volunteers are ready and able to deploy, we do put them on standby.
All right. Thanks for your time, Roberto Baltodano with the American Red Cross in Florida. I also had a chance to catch up with Chris Morris. He is a resident of Charleston, South Carolina, where folks there are being warned about the storm. Chris, what is happening where you are?
Well, they've just called for a evacuation of all the coastal counties in South Carolina because of Hurricane Matthew. They're going to reverse the lanes on I-26, which is one of the big thoroughfares here in the state, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, possibly earlier if this storm keeps tracking the way it has been tracking. So what that means is about 1 million people are going to be looking to move at least 100 miles inland to get away from everything that's coming their way.
Are you seeing anything right now? Is there any storm there at this point, or is it just sort of the calm before the storm?
It is literally the calm before the storm. It is some of the best weather we've had here in South Carolina, you know, in the last several months. I mean, it's very cool right now. Just some cirrus clouds out in the sky, so it's really pretty, a nice breeze coming through. You can tell that we're sort of at the very edge of that storm, but we got a long ways to go.
When is it supposed to actually plow through the area there?
Officially, the evacuation starts tomorrow on Wednesday, but they are encouraging people to leave early because there's going to be a lot of traffic on the roads for this, and the storm's coming in. It's supposed to hit Friday night into early Saturday, but if this thing speeds up, then you don't want to be caught on the roads during a hurricane or tropical storm event.
Now, how concerned are you about your family, your possessions, your home?
You know, I'm not overly concerned. We've been through this in Charleston before, and it's not a good thing, but houses here in South Carolina, especially newer homes, come with boards that you can use to board up your windows or not. Now, right now, we're not planning to do that, but we're going to keep an eye on what's happening with the weather. If it looks like this is going to come in as a Category 3, Category 4, we may revisit that, of course. There's plenty of time right now for me to get my family out, to get my animals out, and to ensure that everybody is safe. And if something happens to the house, you know, we're going to take things like the wedding album with us. The rest of this can all be replaced, or it doesn't need to be.
All right. Thanks for the update, and stay safe. Matthew, by the way, is the strongest hurricane to tear through the Atlantic and the Caribbean Sea since Hurricane Felix in 2007. This is VOA.
Join us for VOA's coverage of the most important U.S. political event of the year. Americans will decide who their next president will be. We'll have all the context, commentary, and analysis with our coverage of the U.S. presidential election. Right here on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. Millennials in the United States are lacking enthusiasm for the presidential election, but there are a number of initiatives across the country that actually might get them to the polls. There are more than a dozen ballot initiatives involving marijuana, either to legalize it for recreational use or for medicinal purposes. Some estimates say it could provide about $7 billion into the nation's economy by 2020. Joining me now is Morgan Fox, Senior Communications Manager for the Marijuana Policy Project. Morgan, thanks for being here. How many states in the U.S. are actually going to be voting in November on marijuana laws?
Well, there are actually 9 states that are going to be considering marijuana initiatives in November. Arizona, California, Maine, Massachusetts, and Nevada will be considering initiatives to regulate and tax marijuana similarly to alcohol for adults, basically making it legal for adults 21 and over. Arkansas actually has 2 medical marijuana initiatives on the ballot. Florida and North Dakota are also going to be considering medical marijuana ballot initiatives. And Montana is considering an initiative that would fix its currently existing medical marijuana system after it was gutted by the legislature several years ago.
It's interesting because, like I said, people are really focused on the presidential race, and I don't think people are really aware of it. But for the people that are in support of these laws, they're probably very focused on it.
Well, I think that all Americans are starting to come to the conclusion that marijuana prohibition is a failure and that we should regulate marijuana similarly to alcohol. Most recent Gallup poll, which was actually about a year ago, showed 58% support. And just judging from all the states that considered legislative action on this issue, in addition to all the states that are considering ballot initiatives, I think that most people are paying a lot of attention to this issue.
Is there any kind of age demographic, or is this across the board for people who are supporting legalization or medical marijuana or either?
Support tends to be stronger among younger voters. And I think that's largely because they have more experience with marijuana consumers and have grown up in a world where at least a few states have recognized the potential medical benefits of marijuana. And, you know, it's also very much more popular in culture. I think that people that have that experience and also have the ability to communicate the way we do now and learn more about marijuana and learn how it's objectively safer than alcohol and learn about all of the horrors committed in the name of the war on drugs, particularly the war on marijuana, that explains a lot of that increased support among that demographic. That's also why running marijuana ballot initiatives during presidential election years is so important, because those years tend to bring out a lot more young voters. In this particular election, that might not necessarily be the case because a lot of people are disenfranchised with the election. But then again, it could be the exact opposite, where people are much more likely to go to the polls and vote for president because they're invested in making sure that the person they like the least is not going to get into office. So that might bring out a lot of people in the states that are considering these initiatives.
How complicated does it get when things become legal in states, but as far as the federal government is concerned, it's still illegal?
Well, no state is required to enforce federal law. So it really comes down to a matter of resources about whether or not the federal government really decides that enforcing marijuana laws, federal marijuana laws, in states that have decided to make it legal for either recreational or medical purposes is really worth their time. And currently, there is actually an amendment on the spending bill that was just passed that prevents the Department of Justice from spending resources on prosecuting patients and providers that are in compliance with state medical marijuana laws. And the current Department of Justice policy is directing U.S. attorneys not to bring cases against people that are in compliance with state law as long as they're meeting a certain set of number criteria.
How do you go about determining whether or not these initiatives are looking like they will pass?
Well, like any other ballot initiative campaign, we run our own polling as well as interested parties running independent polls. So far, it looks like all of the initiatives to make marijuana legal for adults and regulated like alcohol are polling above 50%.
Is there quality control for medical marijuana in the states that where it is legal?
It varies from state to state, but generally most states have pretty strict quality control testing from independent laboratories certified by the state that determine potency, cannabinoid content, and also test for adulterants, pesticides, you know, mold, funguses, things like that.
What's the focus of your organization?
Well, the Marijuana Policy Project is the nation's largest marijuana policy reform organization. We concentrate primarily on state and federal lobbying, as well as running ballot initiatives. We're directly involved in 4 of the 5 legalization initiatives coming up in November. We also do public education and voter outreach, things of that nature, with the ultimate goal being to treat marijuana similarly to alcohol and make sure the people that need it for medical purposes have safe and reliable access.
All right, Morgan Fox with the Marijuana Policy Project. Thank you for being with us. Turning now to what has been trending online with International Edition's G. Abby Lee. Hey, G, what's the word?
Hi, Lori. Hashtag made by Google was trending worldwide after the internet giant introduced its new mobile handset and a new strategy dubbed the AI First strategy that, of course, stands for artificial intelligence. And the new phone is called Pixel and thought to be the company's biggest rival yet to the Apple iPhone and the Samsung Galaxy. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it. No, but it's interesting. What did Google tweet about the big reveal?
So one of the tweets using that hashtag is a quote by Google CEO Sundar Pichai. He said, "We want to help you get things done in your world," referring to a new feature in the handset called Google Assistant.
That's equivalent to iPhone Siri, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right. So a little bit of a personal assistant who lives in your phone to answer any of your questions.
Hmm. What else are people talking about in regard to this new phone?
So people are noting that it has a highest rated smartphone camera, which is very important this day and age, and that battery lasts all day, which has been a huge problem for Apple iPhones. It also comes with unlimited storage for photos and videos. Molly Wood is the tech correspondent at Marketplace, and she tweeted, "Google Pixel phone looks exactly like the love child of iPhone 7 and Galaxy S." So now you know what it looks like.
Oh, the love child. Mm-hmm. I see. All right. So what else is trending?
So something that happened right here in D.C., and the trending hashtag for that is hashtag Forever Duncan. The story is being touted as a romantic love story, and it cropped up on Instagram Monday night. It's about a man who proposed to his longtime girlfriend and threw a surprise wedding for her just 6 hours after the proposal.
Wow. So where can people check out the story?
The videos are all over social media, and the most prominent one is the one in which the bride is wailing with happiness as she's walking into the wedding venue, and she can't even walk properly because she's so happy and kind of screaming thank you to the groom. Many media outlets tweeted about it too. For example, the Huffington Post Black Voices tweeted, "Hashtag Forever Duncan is a black love story we need to see right now." The couple happens to be of Nigerian ethnicity. Many people are either praising or blaming, depending on your gender, that the groom is raising the bar on how women should be proposed. And one popular meme says, "This man planned a whole surprise wedding, and some of y'all cannot even plan a date night." That's all from me today. Lori?
All right, thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G Abby Lee. Turning now to music, a big honor for American singer, songwriter, dancer, and actor Usher. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition's Sarah Williams and says the music star also has a new song.
Usher Raymond, yes indeed, the guy who just got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Congratulations, Tim.
I'll pass it along. He's also got his new album out. It's his eighth album. It was originally going to be called Flawed, which is kind of not a good name for a new album, Flawed. You don't want to start out of the box with that name. So he did change it to Hard to Love and put that out. The critics have not been very kind. The LA Times wrote it's filled with tunes but very little substance. And his last album didn't do very well either. So I don't know. You know, he's kind of slowing down. He's going to turn 38 in a week and hasn't been on the road for a while. But he does performances. He was at the Global Citizens Music Festival in New York Central Park recently. He was on stage doing a show in Atlanta. He fell off the stage, by the way. Not because he's 37, but because he kind of lost his focus, he said. And he was in a film that also did not do very well, Hands of Stone, which was opposite Robert De Niro. He was playing Sugar Ray Leonard in a boxing movie. Didn't do very well. But nonetheless, Usher keeps on being Usher, and the fans are always excited whenever he's got new music.
So what is this new music?
Well, his newest single is a song called Rivals. So I brought that in for you so that you could hear it in the worldwide premiere on your little segment.
So tell me how you feel. Kisses I dare sell that keep me energized. Tired of going back and forth, baby, I'm hypnotized.
You got a girl with love on the low, though.
Well, I mean, this must be good for Usher that he did get this star in the Hollywood Boulevard, because it sounds like he's kind of had a sort of frustrating time recently.
Well, it hasn't been great lately, and of course, his son is battling diabetes, and a couple of years ago, his son, unfortunately, was in a swimming pool accident and had to be resuscitated. And fortunately, he was resuscitated. Usher's been married several times, got married quietly this past year, again for the second time to a stylist. And so hopefully he's happy and he puts everything on the right track. But he seems like a great guy, and he's won so many awards over the years and has sold so many millions of records. People love to watch him dance. They love his moves. He has a new film that he's in production with currently that's going to be coming out in 2017. It's called Last of the Showmen. So we're looking forward to seeing a new movie, and hopefully he does better than Hands of Stone.
Yeah, hopefully it will. All right, thanks very much, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
Without you, I feel uneven. Make every day I love season. Baby girl, you know you're my rider. That should be enough reason. Call you baby, that's only your title. Cause I don't need no more rivals.
You gotta give me that.
I'll put that on the Bible.
You gotta give me that. You're the only thing that I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Well, that's our show for today. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From time to time, the United States identifies certain individuals as crucial to the operation of terrorist organizations. Most often, these are top leaders, or they help finance terrorist organizations. In all cases, these are people who have committed or are deemed to pose a significant risk of committing acts of terrorism. When such an individual is identified, the U.S. government places that person's name on the specially designated terrorist list. His assets within U.S. reach are immediately frozen, and he is locked out of the global financial network. No U.S. citizen or company may conduct business with a designated individual. In this way, the United States disrupts financial support networks for terrorists and terrorist organizations. Until late last year, Abdelkadir Mumin was a recruiter and spokesman for Al-Shabaab, itself a designated terrorist organization that operates mostly in Somalia. In October of last year, Mumin defected from Al-Shabaab and set up an ISIL affiliate in Somalia's Puntland semi-autonomous region. About 20 other members of Al-Shabaab followed him. The group is known to kidnap boys between the ages of 10 and 15, indoctrinate them, and force them to participate in fighting. On August 31st, the U.S. Department of State added Abdelkadir Mumin to the designated global terrorist list under Executive Order 13224. By doing so, the United States serves notice to the U.S. public and the international community that Abdelkadir Mumin is actively engaged in terrorism. Designations of terrorist individuals and groups expose and isolate organizations and individuals and effectively lock them out of the global financial system. Global terrorist designations can also assist or complement the law enforcement actions of other U.S. agencies and other governments. By designating Abdelkadir Mumin a global terrorist, the United States hopes to disrupt his own deadly agenda and to nullify ISIL's intentions of gaining a foothold in East Africa.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.